turned out. Apparently, I'm not whacked enough to be a presenter next, which is it's kind of scary because I'm pretty whacked. But I want to talk a little bit about what I've learned in the process of doing some real WPS stuff. There's no slides or anything. I've got some notes, and I've got a few demos I want to show you, especially to show you ways to attack it and use its capabilities if you're a lazy developer. You know, if you're the guy, if you just don't want to work very hard, how do you go about figuring out a way to leverage capabilities? So let's bring up my advanced presentation tool here. And the thing with this, and the reason I put it on the side over there the way I did, is that there's a lot of good news, but there's a lot of bad news too. Okay, let's see, you're not in the head there. It's a real mixed bag. I get to do a lot of things that I never could do before. When I create user interfaces, it just break whole new ways of thinking about how the user should interact. But man, sometimes it's pretty hard. So I'm going to go through this cycle several times. Good news, bad news, good news, and keep coming back around. The bad news number one is that WPF just takes a long time to learn. Now, has anybody here not started your WPF projects yet? Just haven't even not really started? Because if you already know this, I'm not going to, you know, pound on you about it. I think there are several people, there are some that I know, and I think there are probably a lot around the country, who have started WPF thinking, oh, yeah, okay, give me a week. I'll figure it out. Nope. No chance. It'll take you quite a bit longer than that. And part of the reason for that is that the resources are not as mature as they need to be. I think the samples aren't very well structured for learning. The samples are structured for showing off functionality. The books that are out there now are much more oriented around features than around a conceptual skeleton to help you understand how the things go together. So that's kind of the bad news. I think that'll get better. At least I hope it will. And that's the more bad news is that the designers leave a bit to be desired. They've got some maturity left to go. For those of you who do a lot of WPF work, do you just type XAML all the time? Is that just really what you end up doing?
Unfortunately,
yeah. See, I'm not doing so much of that. I'm really insisting that the designers are going to do as much as they can for me and try not to just edit XAML because I just don't like that experience of editing XML to make something work.
Now, when you refer to designers, are you talking about the Visual Studio designers?
The Visual Studio designer and the Expression Blend designer.
And Expression Blend.
Both of them are inadequate. Both of them fill certain parts of what's needed, but neither of them offers, or even both of them together, offer a complete experience for the developer. There are still gaps and things that it just won't do. And I'm hoping that that's an area that we'll see some rapid evolution. But right now, you know, you just have to do a lot of XAML editing. Blend is better than Cider, I think. And let's get the code name dropped for those of you that are not into the sort of Microsoft code name things. Blend is Expression Blend. That's not its official name, is it? It's Expression Interactive Designer. What is it, you Microsoft guys? What's the official name of Blend?
Expression Blend.
It is the official name now?
Yeah.
I thought it was Expression Interactive.
No,
That name is gone. All right. That's good. I always call it Blend. Cider was the code name for what is known as the Visual Studio Visual Designer for Windows Presentation Foundation. I don't think it has any better name than Cider, so that's what we call it. So Blend is better than that, actually. If you're going to do prototypes and layouts and things like that, you just really can't do that in Visual Studio. It just doesn't have enough control over what you're doing on the user interface to do any sophisticated prototypes. You can't do animation in Cider, etc. On the other hand, when you shift to doing primarily code and you get out of the layout mode, now Cider does a pretty good job. One thing Cider does do pretty well, if you haven't figured this out, is working with getting grids right. The column editor and the grid editor in Cider is one of its best features. Better than anything in Blend. So I hope we're going to see something a little better than that as we go forward here. The good news, at least I think of it as good news, is that you think about UI design completely differently in WPF. Why is that good news? Well, from our standpoint, you know, we're trying to deliver some value to people, and the more value we can deliver, the more they'll pay us, I hope. So the fact that you've got some brand new possibilities for design really, really helps make WPF more valuable. I think about it completely differently. I don't even use the same phraseology on buttons and such. It's weird to get into a different frame of mind about how you... I mean, I've been doing GUIs now since roughly 1993. And so 12, 14 years of that. And this is the first time I've really sort of broken out of that paradigm. You don't, for example, one of the things you don't want to do is you don't want to think about the interface as a set of interconnecting rectangles. If you do that, you're genuinely limiting what the whole thing is going to be able to do for you. And that has interesting implications. For example, we just had a discussion. This was just before I left for Mix on Friday. We had a discussion about, do we want to left justify labels or right justify labels in a column of data entry fields? And you think, oh, that's not a big decision, isn't it? But you know, we've always done it with left justification because we think in terms of rectangles. But actually, in a WPF world where you think more in terms of white spaces and things interacting, right justify labels make more sense, I think, because they kind of respect the white space. So those are that's one of 100 ways that people tend to think differently about design, and I'm kind of excited about that. Let me tell you the biggest single thing, though, that I've seen that affects my user interface design in WPF that I did not expect when I went into it in terms of how it changes the way I think about things. That's templated list boxes. They are much more important, I think, than most people give them credit for. I find that they're just use them all over the place. If you've ever seen this beautiful healthcare demo that doesn't really do anything, this guy right here, this is a templated list box. And you've got the ability to change the level of detail that you see in this list box. And you can do it on the fly. There's complete separation between the data and the way it's presented inside the list box. I did a quick prototype for one of my users in which I did something not unlike that. So that if I'm going to select an employee, I've got various views that they can take. You can have sort of the traditional grid view, which I don't like much. And you can have a sort of one with not too much stuff. You can have detailed views. You can even have some interaction within the item. You can have templates that are different from the selected item. You can even write something called a template selector that peeks at the data for the item and decides which template to apply on the fly. So you can have templates that vary from item to item. Now, I think this is a big deal in terms of user interface design because you think about, for example, the implications in people doing lookup, working with information. If you're able to give them access to the things they need the worst in a nice formatted way where it's easy to see, now, in many cases, they don't even need to go beyond this. They just see what it is they want to do. Whereas in traditional applications, it's much more, well, let me pick up Sherlock Holmes there and go get a detailed screen because that's really got all the stuff I need on it. Or maybe use a data grid with a grid-like layout to show some more things. But it's hard to get it formatted so that people's eyes are drawn to the things that they need. So this really has a big impact for me on the way I think about doing user interface design in WPF. And learning to use templated list boxes is, I think, one of the more important things that a fresh WPF developer needs to learn, especially learning to write things like, how do you manage the templates, where you put them, resources, and how do you write template selectors to change the templates based on the data and things like that. Data binding. Data binding works very well. That was a lesson for me personally, more because I've hated data binding for 15 years now, at least. I was at what was the name of the conference? Comdex, when they introduced data binding in Visual Basic. Was it version 2, version 3? And I heard the first example of the same story I've heard about 5 times, which is, man, all you gotta do is just hook this stuff up and it just, the data just goes back and forth. Isn't that great? Well, in concept it is. That's a great pattern. I like the pattern so much I ended up writing my own data binder. Because there's never been work right in classic DB. And it didn't really work the way I wanted in Windows Forms either. But finally, we got a data binder that is so good that I'm not gonna try to write my own. I think it's because data binding is built so deeply into WPF that it has to work well. So you pretty much have to use it. Now, that doesn't mean that there are some interesting things you can do around it. I think binding expressions are kind of whack. I don't care much for them. They're difficult to write. You don't really get as good an intelligence experience in them as I'd like. So I wrote a helper object with attached properties to handle binding. So if you want to set binding, common types of binding, you just set it in the property box. I want to bind this text box to that data field. Well, I know what property I want to bind. It's the text property. And I can set whether it's one way or both two-way, etc., by using some attached properties. That's helpful because the Visual Studio designer, and this is back to bad news, has no data binding support. That's one of the reasons developers end up using Blend, is because Blend has the capability for data binding and data binding support in the designer, and Visual Studio doesn't. But I like data binding in WPF for a change. Missing controls, that's being fixed. No data grid, no data controls right now. They're going to be added this summer to both WPF and Silverlight. I think the beta one of Silverlight has them. But there are various things you might miss. A few Windows Forms guides, for example. No error providers. Now, you can learn to get around things like that by using the things that are built into WPF that kind of do the same purposes. They think when you're supposed to show data errors that you're supposed to use control templates for that. All right, I guess. But I'm lazy, man. I don't like managing lots of control templates for all kinds of different controls. So I wrote a replacement error provider. I wrote one in WPF. It's pretty nice. Where is it? Crank that guy. So, remember this guy, you know, that sort of stuff, when it's forms, well, you can do it in WPF too. That's the WPF window. You can change it on the fly. Just change the stuff in there. Oops, gotta press the button for that. So, change to that. Notice it fades in and out, which is kind of a nice usability thing. And that, and it's kind of gently, kind of helpful thing. You can also substitute the visual out. You can control the, because WPF is so nice about this, you can control the positioning. So my version controls positioning independently, vertically and horizontally. And it turned out in our usability studies that people really liked error messages for list boxes in that upper right-hand corner. That just seemed to be good. They just liked it. You can say you can change the size of it, too. There's a button to change the size of the position and stuff like that. So, you know, that sort of thing would have been very, very hard for me to write in Windows Forms. I don't know how long it would have taken me to write an error provider in Windows Forms, but I wrote one in 3 days in WPF. And it's got a capability than the Windows Forms one does, which gives you an idea of just how powerful as a visual presentation technology that it is. Now, that doesn't mean it was easy. I had to learn about attached properties and adorners and the dispatch system and all this deep down stuff, but it was a good learning exercise. By the way, that sample, that error provider sample, I'm posting that as a public sample. I've got an article in progress from SDN Magazine on that. It's a good sample to learn how adorners work and how attached properties work. Some of those internal things, that's a good sample to see how that works. And I'm going to put that sample in my book on WPF as well for the same reason. Some things are harder. Man, I loved Windows Forms. I could do new controls, inherit, throw some new properties on there, and you know, I got a new control before I know it. It turns out that in WPF, that's a little more difficult. First of all, you don't just throw a property on there. You have to understand the dependency property system before you can do extended controls. Then you have to understand control templates. You really can't inherit and start doing things to a control if you don't get the whole thing behind control templates, and that is not easy. Control templates are a little strange. So some things are harder, some things are easier. You have to find find your place in learning this technology in terms of what kind of development you do that determines how much you're going to learn. Because I'm going to put it to you this way, you are not going to learn all of WPF. I'm not. I'm going to write a book on it. I'm not going to learn it all. So you have to kind of find your balance point there. Do use designers. Design help is very important for we developers to take advantage of what WPF will do. Although, I find that finding a good interaction designer is kind of hard. Right? There are plenty of visual design folks. There are plenty of folks who can make it look pretty. But what I find difficult is people that make it act natural. That not that many designers really seem to be tuned into that. I think that will get better as they learn something about this technology. But don't be complacent about turning an interface over to a designer and just getting something back that's pretty, but in essence doesn't work any better than the stuff you had before. If you do that, what's the benefit of WPF or Silverlight? If you do that. One of the nice things to talk about, some things are easier to do, separating UI from logic. Okay, so you saw that in one respect in the sort of templated list boxes, but I want to show you a little thing that I created. Again, because I'm lazy and I don't like writing the same code over and over again. This is something I wrote. It's kind of part of my framework to use WPF. Let me write and show it. I have this little thing called entity processor. Okay, so if you see it in action here, I pick Hermione and say, yeah, okay. I'm using, by the way, WPF commands in here to tie all this together. So I've got some diagnostic stuff in place right now. Here's Hermione, and you know, maybe I'll change your name or something, I'll find out where the initial is, and save. Okay, cool, save commands access. And we've got savings. If I go back to that guy, there's Hermione's got the X in there. So you see that I really do have a window that has the capability of accessing data, saving, etc. Now, here's the part that's interesting. Let's go to that edit window. Employee edit. Now, here it is. Let's bring up the XAML. Now, let's shut this down so I can use the environment a little better. Let's go to employee edit XAML. So you see, that is the thing I was using there, name, social security number. It's getting its cosmetics from the host that it goes into, right? Okay, so how many lines of code do you suppose I have in there? Zero lines of code. Now, that's pretty cool. The fact that it can get to my data source, update the data, put it back. How is it doing that? Well, naturally, some things are going on in XAML. Some of the binding stuff, etc., is being taken care of there. But the reason that this works is because of the way data context works in WPF. So I have a component called an entity processor. Let's bring that guy up. Where is the entity processor? There it is. And he is a generic component. So look at him full screen. Okay? You guys know generics, right? You use generic collections. Okay, so I've got this entity processor that I tell it, you know, what kind of data am I working with? And by the way, what is the WPF type where you select an item? What's the WPF type where you edit an item? Okay? And now it's got code in it to handle all those commands. So there's when an open command is executed, well, there's the logic. You can see my message box. And he says, oh, well, I want to edit this item. Let me create a new editor. Let me attach that editor, which means getting it, put it in its host. And let's set its data context. So once I set its data context, the binding takes place. And everything's cool. And I've got a bunch of those in there that handle various other commands. So now the buttons in that form, over there in that edit form, are hooked up to commands. I'll show you how I did that very quickly, and then I'll go on. Example. Let's see, for example, here is the save. And if we go down here to my thing here, you could do this in code or whatever, but I actually did it with XAML so that with a helper object so I can do an XAML. So you can actually have a little drop down that says, well, what action is associated with this button? Oh, okay. So the buttons are associated with actions. The individual data fields are associated with data fields. Or, I'm sorry, the individual UI elements are associated with data fields via data binding. The edit screen doesn't have to have a single line of logic. Okay? You like that? it's hard when you've only got, you know, a dozen or so people to rev up the excitement.
No, I'm excited.
You're excited? All right, well, at least Josh is excited. Look at some samples for good design tips, because we're developers and you want to get some good inspiration for that. Don't copy them too slavishly. I've seen some really hideous business apps where people looked at a sample that didn't really apply. Silverlight, you know, the adoption rate of WPF has not been quite as high, I think, as a lot of people thought it ought to be. I think part of that is just the general feeling in the industry that, man, if it's not running in a browser, something's wrong. That just seems to be a general feeling among folks. Okay, fine. So Silverlight runs in a browser, does most of the same stuff. And it's quite possible, I think, that the adoption rate for Silverlight, even for business applications, will be much, much higher because of that, which means that you want to prepare for Silverlight. If you are doing a business app and you think that that's the way you will eventually want to expose it, then, well, I mean, we got the beta one this morning, so you could start working with that now. Or you could do it in WPF and respect the limitations of Silverlight. The interesting thing to me is, if you were interested in Silverlight for the last year, you would be better off working in WPF than in Silverlight 1.0. Because Silverlight 1.0 didn't teach you much. But WPF did. And now all that stuff becomes helpful, as long as you leave out, you know, 3D and dot com layout, fancy panels and stuff like that. I find, especially Windows Forms developers, I guess ASP.NET developers do this too, they're not as bad about that, because HTML is a little more dynamic, and people are used to things like repeaters and such. But in Windows Forms, we don't have any capability for the concept of WPF content, which makes things a lot more flexible. So now, you know, you don't worry much about if you want a particular kind of button, then lay the bloody thing out and get exactly what you want. Stick a grid in there. They never did get buttons in Windows Forms right when it came to text and graphics. They never gave me all the positioning options that I wanted. Now, if you're explaining something to somebody coming into WPF, they kind of don't get this. They're kind of looking at, what's this? Why do I have to set content? Well, just give me some properties to set, you know, text and things. Well, or give me some standard layout that the thing is supposed to have. And that's missing the point of WPF. Because if you really want a flexible button or a flexible tooltip, then you want to be able to use any layout container now or still to be created. So that's why none of these controls have a standard layout container. You just put whatever layout in there you want. So I looped this up 10 minutes before the session. I thought, you know, let's do a fancy tooltip. Not much to it, basically. I got a button right here. He's got a tooltip. I stuck a stack panel in it with an image and a text block. And now I've got, you know, a tooltip with an image in it. Sure, tooltips can be strings, and I can just set a string, and I can get string content. But, you know, I can put anything in a tooltip. Actually, don't put moving video on a tooltip. I found out that did not work well. Apparently, as impressive as the WPF engine is, I found that putting video on moving tooltip was not a satisfying experience.
But it works.
It kind of works. It will blow up. If you try, it's just the video kind of does give you things. Animation's good. Keep it very subtle. I think we saw that in the keynote this morning on the ad. I've seen a little bit too much animation in a lot of the samples now. For example, I think this is bad. Okay? This is not terrible in terms of flipping that card when you select a new record. But this is totally gratuitous. Woo! Spin it, put it in there. I'm sorry, that's too much for me. So keep the animation a little bit more subtle when you get into the WPF. Use subtly, it's very powerful. And of course, if you're going to create animations, this is for people who haven't done much WPF. That's what Blend is for, buddy. Don't try to code animations in XAML by hand by yourself. That's just something you don't want to spend time doing. I think we will see some nice designers later, because WPF is designer friendly, even though the designers now are not as good. And I think we'll see some good code generators for it. That thing, that trick I used with the entity processor, now imagine the code generator that did that. Oh, gosh, as a matter of fact, I've got a pretty interesting example I should show you. I forgot that I had this. This is pretty clever. Let me find it. Where is it? XAML generation. This is actually to kind of show the crossover. This is a Windows form application, but it's got some link over XML. Take a look at this. It's link over XML. So if you're WPF, you kind of recognize this XML looking stuff in here. In this case, there's a list, this thing called fields, which is a list of strings that represent data fields. Okay? So what this code does, it just looks through there and builds XAML based on those field names. Yeah, as many as you want. Crank XAML out just like that. Watch this. Okay, what field names do you want to add? So,
two or three.
Mix. That's good, because that wouldn't normally be in there. One more?
Silverlight.
Okay, just generate, and there's XAML. Wham. If I take that XAML and paste it into, well, I'll just do it, and it's not that big a deal. Set myself a new project. WPF application. Wham. And I'm literally going to go right now to that side of that grid that's generated, drop the stack panel in, and wham, here you go. UI. So you've got interesting possibilities for code generators, interesting possibility for generating UI on the fly, because it's much, much easier to write code like this than it is the equivalent code in various other environments. I wrote this demonstration in 10 minutes. Okay? So that's one of the things I find very exciting about WPF, is the fact that we will get all kinds of on-the-fly dynamic technologies out of it as people learn how to use XAML and generate it on the fly. Other lessons? Don't clone a Windows Forms interface. I have seen this at least 3 times among people that I know in Nashville. Is they move to WPF and they get done, and I look at it and go, man, I could have done that in Windows Forms. There's nothing about what you just did that's any different or better. And then what's the point? It takes you longer to do it in WPF, and you've got no benefit from that. So certainly don't do that. When you start reading a book about dependency properties and routed events, this is for people who haven't started WPF. Okay? Just skip all that. Just pretend that a routed event is an event, and pretend that a dependency property is a normal property, and go about your business and learn about WPF, and then come back after a while and look at the nuances. Okay? They will be important at some point, but it just irritates me to see these books on WPF that start out, first of all, with a chapter on everything you'd ever want to know about XAML, when you don't even have a clue what XAML is supposed to do yet. You don't know anything about the object model or whatever. And then the next chapter is to tell you all about dependency properties and routed events. No, learn the control set, learn the layout system. That's probably the single thing you got to know first, is the layout system. And it's pretty complex. I rewrote the section of my book on the layout system 3 times. Partially because in writing it, I found out I didn't know as much as I thought I did. And secondly, because learning to tell you about all the factors that go into layout is just hard. And you'll still have to learn to work with it some yourself. I think that's pretty much it, although I tried to keep it in about half an hour. Did I make it? Pretty much. And I'm certainly willing to take questions or further discussion. Any lessons that other people have got that they want to mention? I didn't mention attached properties, although I showed the fact that that's the way I attach the commands to the buttons. What else?
I think maybe a little bit more advanced topic for the attached properties, but like the universal extension mechanism. Once you have a pretty good
That's right. Attached partnerships, he says, are kind of a universal extension mechanism. You're able to write help logics that kind of attach to anything with that. They can, when a tax property is set, for starters, you can tap into various events on the controller, to speak segments, which makes it possible to do various interesting things. So yeah, I find that to be, in terms of people who develop the baseline framework for some of this, these WPFX, attached properties are an absolutely invaluable piece of technology. But the typical developer that's developing primarily UI and using those things and not developing frameworks probably isn't going to use it very much.
I don't know if I agree with that.
Yeah, you think so? What's your rationale?
I don't agree with that because there's times when you can either work around an issue or you need to solve a problem that you can't solve from some class.
Yeah.
And because technically you can't do it, whether the base control is sealed or whether you need to add. So you have two axes, right? You have the controls, the functionality that you need to add, and then you have the controls. If I want to add a particular piece of functionality to three types of controls, I don't want to subclass all three.
So for the camera, his point is that there are places where, because you can't inherit or you can't override, you can't subclass, that's an alternative mechanism. And I'll grant you, I can see that. I guess I haven't run into any of those myself, but I can see that would make sense as a scenario.
Yeah, we run into a problem because when we get the designers coming and say, we want to do this with this control.
The designers want to do something special with the control.
We can't do it purely through styling or assembly. We have to add functionality. If we can do it using attached properties, it saves us the subclass of maintenance.
Yeah.
Because if we want to rip that functionality out, we just
cut off the attached properties. I can see that. Certainly, I have found them to be extremely valuable in doing the stuff I've done. And one of the big reasons is that they allow you to extend the designer itself in Visual Studio and Big Blend. They will show up in both places. So you give people the capability to set things in a designer rather than write XAML. And I find that to be just a huge benefit.
Our designers love that because when they go into the project, they see it.
They just set it. The designers can set it, Blend. But you have the code that controls what happens when they set that option. And yeah, I find that to be very, very beneficial. What else?
What have you found in the performance?
I'm sorry? What
about performance?
Performance?
Where have you found the big performance hits that you have?
The big performance hits, bitmap effects have been a problem. And I think I'm sure they're going to fix that. Other than that, I really haven't run into anything serious. If I've got really complex templates and really long lists, well, it starts to get to be a problem. But you know, I've been happy with the performance in general. I really thought a lot of the animation and a lot of the things would cause blinking and jittery. No, actually, that really does very well, at least on the machines I have. But we're pretty careful to get machines with some pretty decent video horsepower.
I'm involved in two sets of apps. One is .NET, Windows Forms. And the other is VB6.
So you have two sets of apps, one .NET, VB4, then Windows Forms, and one VB6.
What are the benefits of converting to Silverlight?
Benefits of converting to Silverlight?
Line of business apps.
See, it depends upon the kind of line of business app. How important is usability? How many people are going to use it? Well, you can get some enormous improvements in terms of productivity by doing WPF or Silverlight right. But that's a fairly big investment. If you can only spread that investment out over 20 users, it's very, very hard to make
a vertical application.
But if there are 1,000 users or many users, now, since you're spreading that investment out over a much bigger area, I think that one of the key things is the fact that that you are improving productivity. If it's Silverlight, then your deployment story gets much, much simpler. You basically have the richness of a forms-based application with the elegance of the deployment model of a web application, which is, man, that's about as big as it gets in today's world. You want the VB6 stuff to kind of enter the glide path to its eventual removal. So yeah, you'd like to be able to do something with that. You know, we're in a tough time right now deciding about should you take Windows Forms or should you take WPF, because the longer you wait to get to WPF, the better the resources will be, the better the tools will be, the more expertise there will be around in order to do it cheaply and cost effectively. So there is a certain benefit to waiting longer to get to WPF. On the other hand, the sooner you move to WPF, the faster you have an app with hopefully a longer shelf life and you're taking advantage of the capabilities. So it's a really tough decision. I work through it with some people, it's hard.
The one thing about WPF is that the ramp for learning the technology to really deeply understand how it works and why it works the way it does doesn't get any less. So the longer you wait, the more tools will be there, the tools will help you out, and you really need to understand the really dumb for the guy to understand it. There's still a steep ramp for really
good. That's a good point.
As they add more features and put more
for the camera, his point is that the ramp up to get to the point of being a real expert in WPF, being able to use it effectively, is pretty long, and there's a limit to what the tools can do to shorten it. And I certainly agree with that. In fact, I think is going to be a pressing problem. If Silverlight explodes in terms of its demand, there's going to be a huge bottleneck in terms of people who understand how to program it effectively. And I think we can probably expect that we're going to see that. What's your take on it? You guys have done it. If you took just a guy that understood ASP.NET pretty deeply and World Witness Forms pretty deeply, and you turned him loose on WPF with appropriate, somebody to mentor him, et cetera, how long do you think it would take? I'm going to have my ideas before they get to be really proficient, really productive.
I'd say
3 months. That's a pretty good number.
At least that,
yeah.
You have to understand the guy goes down, and that's one part of it. And then you have to go through the pain of doing things wrong. At least
you have to make a lot of mistakes.
And then you're wrong, maybe not.
Yeah. So it takes I think the 3 months, if I understand you correctly, is just where they are doing some productive work. There's still quite a bit more. And before you really become an expert, I think you're looking at a year or more. Okay. I think I've probably used up enough time now. 40 minutes. So, if you folks who see this, where is this video going anyway?
VisitMix.com.
Wish you folks are here in Las Vegas because we're having a heck of a time. Thanks, folks.